Hello and welcome to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. Joining Al Kellogg, Rachel Malcolm and I on the podcast this week is former Scotland star David Denton, plus current Scotland star Panache Mozambi. I'll come to you first, Dents, because I know you're back in Edinburgh, aren't you?
Yep, I am. We've been back for a while now, which has been fantastic. As soon as my retirement became official, I sort of, just before I was shooting back and forward, trying to sort of make some plans here, and then we decided, regardless of what we're going to be doing, we want to be based here.
Brilliant. And then you're also in Edinburgh, Panache. Now, I think Rach will call you Nashy or Nash, so you tell us what you prefer. But you're also in Edinburgh. How are you finding lockdown?
I'm in Edinburgh. It's okay. Like, I think I'm getting used to it. I think I'm more professional off it rather than anything. I had a lot of stuff to do beforehand, but now kind of don't have much to do, so kind of walking about aimlessly and not knowing what to do with myself, really.
Are you training hard?
Yes, of course, always.
Yeah, you've got to say that, don't you? Dench, you're looking well. You look as if you've maybe even lost a bit of timber in retirement.
You know what, mate? My our scale ran out of battery recently, and I'm pretty happy about it because I haven't weighed myself in a couple of months, but I think I needed to lose a bit of weight. I was sitting just over 120 kilos when I finished playing, and I think I definitely, for health reasons, I think I need to drop that a little bit. So I've not, I just started getting back into exercise. I was doing a lot of swimming, and I've actually just bought an assault bike, which is probably the worst purchase I've ever made, but potentially the best as well. So I've been doing a bit of that. I think I'm going to stay off. I've got no interest in doing any weights for a few years, but as my arms get smaller and my shoulders get thinner, I might do a couple, but I think bits of cardio here and there will be fine for me for now.
Are you now able to exercise kind of unrestricted? Obviously, I know you had issues with concussion symptoms, so are you now able to kind of do whatever exercise you
need? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've had no restrictions recently, and that's been fantastic. I mean, it's been a fairly up and down, I guess, year and a half for me, but that's the most important thing was always just getting healthy again. And that I found that so frustrating. There was a period where, I mean, obviously the really early stages of my concussion, I understood that that's how it is. You sort of can't really exercise and stuff. But I was, at one stage, I was a year in and I couldn't play around the golf because I'd feel ill after. So it's so good for me to be able to exercise again and just get out and be active, basically.
Yeah, 100%. I had nowhere near kind of the issues you had, but I had a relatively long concussion last season of about 6 months. And it's just like being able to live normally more than anything. You just thrive, isn't it?
Exactly.
Not thrive, wish for. So yeah, that's good to hear that you're feeling better.
Yeah, no, it's massively important. It's kind of, my missus kind of always reminds me to sort of take note of where we were sort of a year ago and how at that time, that's literally all we spoke about is it doesn't matter retiring from rugby, what I'm going to do next, all of that stuff just wasn't as important as just getting healthy again. Whereas now we're both pretty healthy. We actually think we've all had COVID-19 as well, which wasn't fun, but now we're actually feeling good and trying to be positive about it.
Good.
And I see you've gone, obviously you can't see us, this is a podcast, but we can see you, Dents, and you've gone for the short hair again. Was that, when did you get rid of the long golden locks?
It was during lockdown, mate. Do you know what? I got rid of the long locks before that. And now I'm actually heartbroken that all the final, obviously I didn't know at the time, but all the last pictures of me playing rugby, I've got this absolutely awful haircut and I just don't know what I was thinking. I think, at the time, I thought, you know what, this will be fun to do for a year, a bit of a laugh. Little did I know, those would be the last games I would ever play of rugby. So now, whenever I have to look back at those games or pictures of my time at Tigers, I look like an absolute reprobate.
It's not like nobody told you that, though. Like, we used to tell you that regularly.
Yeah. And you know what? It became like I was being so stubborn. And you know what the biggest thing was? And I'm sure maybe I'm just still a child at heart, but I'm sure some of you will attest, is my mum kept telling me how bad it was and to cut it. So I was like, my mum's telling me I'm not cutting it. I'm an independent 30-year-old. I can do what I want. Yeah, little did I know I should have listened to it.
You know Rich pretty well. We've got some insight into Rach as a skipper over the last few months as she's been hosting this. Give us, you got any good insights, any good stories you can tell us on Rachel before we do a bit of a deeper dive into your rugby journey?
Rach is great.
There we go.
Don't forget to pay me. Don't forget to pay me for that. No, she's brilliant. And I think for me being new at this, really, it's nice to have someone that you can kind of just ask the questions and Rach is always there to kind of answer. And she knows, like, I'll ask and I'll pester her for, like, an answer. I'll pull her aside and say, like, this happened. How can I change things? And she's always there to kind of to answer those questions. So yeah, I think I speak for myself, but I think I speak for the team as well, that she's brilliant.
Nash is one of these.
Been a nicer answer, even if you'd written it yourself.
Nash is one of these players that will do kind of everything to make herself as best she can be. She's like one of the players that, when half of us are chilling at night time, Nash will be on the laptops watching training from the day and stuff. So she is one to always ask questions, which is brilliant. So she's a good egg, good addition to the squad for sure.
Brilliant. So Denza, and I'll have to ask you, because you two know each other for a while as well. You would have played against each other. What's some of the memories that stand out with you two, either playing with each other or playing against each other? I'll come to you first, Denza.
With me and Big Al?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this when you mentioned it. I remember we never came to blows, actually, but I remember once when before my first cap, I always remember this about Al. I think we were both on the bench at a World Cup warm-up game against Ireland, and I walked into the change room, and I was obviously, you know, pretty excited about the whole thing. And it was the team run before the game, and I kind of came in, and I was sneakily trying to take a photo of my locker. To like send to my mates, but obviously I didn't want the boys to see, because you can't be excited, that's not cool, you just take it in your stride. And Big Al was sat next to me, he noticed, like, come on, dude, sit in your locker, let me take a photo. And I was like, aww. Damn it. So I sat down and he took a photo of me, and I always, yeah, like I said, I'll always remember that. It was a very embarrassing but nice moment for me.
What year was that, Dave?
2011. Yeah, so it was before the 2011 World Cup.
You were skipper, Al, were you not?
Yeah, I wasn't on the bench. I started that game and I was skipper, but it's good that Dave's got different memories.
Well, mate, it was a warm-up game.
Yeah, we played Ireland.
Played
Ireland at Murrayfield. No, I was... No, I definitely started it. Well, I say that, I don't really remember games, but I'm sure I did. I think Leo Cullen was skipper in Ireland on the day, and we had a wee bit of history.
All lads.
So, well, my memories of Dave, Christendom, well, I think it was me, the Rhino, on a tour to South Africa, and it was just a case of, right, Dave, your job is to get the ball and run forward. Don't worry about anything else, just get the ball and run forward, which he did brilliantly.
Yeah, I was really good. He always hit my rucks for me that I never went near. He was like, listen, Dad, you carry the ball, I'll hit those rucks. I was like, mate, you flipped. This is absolutely fantastic. You couldn't say anything better.
We've got a few of them in our team. Rach McLachlan, she's a great one to have on your shoulders to come with me. Loves a ruck. Well,
it played to both our strengths, or probably... potential weaknesses, you know. Let Dave carry the ball, he'll be bashing holes, and I'll just run in behind him and clear the ball out for somebody to pass it. Now, we've all got our jobs in our rugby park, and I was happy with that one. I remember quite a lot of good times in the line out as well. It wasn't Dave's favourite part of the game at the beginning, but it became a brilliant option probably through that 2011 series, and a lot of conversations about hair, mostly his hair, not my lack of hair, but not probably not from me, but from the rest of the squad as well. But And to be honest, Dave, although you are an absolute Edinburgh legend, I do remember your first session you would have been an academy player, but you were through at Glasgow for a couple of months.
Yeah, so I was talking to my brother about this the other day. I remember it very well, mate, because I used to, like you say, I was in the academy at the time. So we used to do Mondays and Tuesdays, we'd be sent out to the pro teams. And I was with Glasgow, so I used to get up at 5 in the morning, get the train through to Glasgow. I think it was 3 trains I had to get, and then you had to walk to, what was the training place called again? The indoor bit? It was a hell of a long journey. I remember I'd always get there, do the weight session in the morning, go into the first meeting, and I'd be absolutely knackered, falling asleep in the back of the meeting. But I used to love it. I absolutely loved it because for me, it was going my first time training with full professionals because the academy at the time was very different. We used to do all our stuff together. Then I was coming in and all these guys, these Scotland's internationals, and I was able to sort of get there and immerse myself in it. And it was good fun. And I actually remember just before, it was just at the end of the season, we had a conversation. I remember I'd been offered at the time, contract by Edinburgh and Glasgow. And I remember you pulling me aside, basically giving me the lay of the land. Like, listen, mate, don't stuff around here. You're coming to Glasgow. And I was like, yeah, of course I am, mate. So it's a great place. Next day, I was like, sorry, I'm off to Edinburgh, mate.
Yeah, ironically, if it had been 2 years before, I'd have been telling you to go to Edinburgh because you know that I've done my time at both clubs as well.
So it's a little bit on Dents and his kind of introduction to rugby. Didn't know you played at Glasgow, but I do know that, Panache, you played basketball, didn't you, before you got into rugby? Is that right?
Yeah, so I played basketball since I was at high school, really. Played quite a lot at high school, played in a few tournaments at school. And then when I went to uni, I also played for the uni team, which is a big transition because when you play at high school, it's just, you know, it seems like it's just fun and it's much easier. But when you play at uni rugby, where it's, you know, people from all over the world, really, who some of them have been playing for years and years and so experienced, that was an interesting transition, but real fun, like so much fun.
So was that the first exposure to rugby that you had, was when you went to university?
So when I went to Napier after a few years of playing basketball there, just wanted a change. I think I'd played basketball for so long, and the uni team were starting a rugby team, and I just kind of went along to a try session, and I proper loved it, and then I just kind of stuck around, and here we are, I guess.
And Panache, you moved from Zimbabwe to Scotland, I think, when you were 12 years old. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And so, Dents, when did you come from Zimbabwe? What age were you?
So I was. It was when I finished school. So basically, I left Zimbabwe. I went to school in South Africa when I was about 15, and then as soon as I finished school, I came over to Scotland. So I would have been 18 at the time.
Yeah. 18. Do you ever play basketball or any other sports over in Zimbabwe before rugby?
No, I didn't play, but I love basketball. I watch a lot of basketball now, but I did loads of swimming. I played swimming and water polo, basically, were two sports that I did a lot of. I've been doing a lot of swimming since I retired, and just before COVID really got really serious, I was looking at joining a water polo club as well. I used to love it, mate. That was it was obviously a summer sport when there was no rugby at the time, and it was a fantastic sport and great for staying in shape. It's great fun. So I think once things calm down, which God knows when that will be, I'm pretty sure I'll try to take that up again.
You both made the move over at different times in your career. Dents, what's your kind of your first memory? We'll come back to you in a second, Nashie, the same question, but I'll come to you first, Dents. What's your first memory of arriving in, you know, in this new place, this new culture almost for you?
Oh, mate, I couldn't have been more. I was so excited, but I was a fish out of water. I had absolutely no idea what was going on. I remember, so I was with Edinburgh Accies at the time. So before I moved over, I'd been in touch with the National Academy, and I'd been in touch with Edinburgh Accies about coming and playing for Accies and trying to get a trial with the academy. So they gave me a trial. And I remember my first couple of sets, my first session with Aki's, I turned up on a Tuesday night. It was definitely, I've been in the UK 10 years. This was by far, and I'm pretty sure it's widely regarded as the worst winter in the last decade. It was awful. And I've turned up, genuinely, I went to my first training session in shorts and a jersey, and a rugby jersey. I had nothing warm on me, and short socks. And the coach looked at me, he was like, what the hell do you think you're doing? And I was this little weedy little boy from school playing men's rugby for the first time. And I was staying with a friend of my mum's at the time, and he came to pick me up from training, and I was just drenched, like literally from the top of my head to the tip of my toes, I was covered in mud. And I was awful as well. I was playing such bad rugby. Like, I'm sure Big Al's going to jump on the back of this, but I literally couldn't catch a cold. My skill set was never fantastic, but it literally got 10 times worse. And then I remember then the next day, I was just as I rather. The next day I went, because after that, I was like, what have I done? Why am I not just in South Africa or somewhere warm that I don't need to train in this bloody mud? And the next day I went, Guido, the old Scotland team manager, was my mum's friend's brother, basically. And he took us around, little 18-year-old boy with his mum going around Murrayfield. And he took us around, and I remember walking around Murrayfield, and I went there for the first time, and I was just, it's unbelievable. And walked into the gym, and straight away, Mossy was there. And I think it was Ali Hogg, and I think it was Webbo as well. And these were guys that I watched on TV, and I was like, "This, I can't believe this." They're in the gym, and you know what Mossy's like. Mossy's such a friendly, just nice bloke. He came over, really had a conversation with me, and I came out of that just like, "Mum, piss off, I'm here. This is me. I'm in Scotland for the next decade. I'm absolutely going to love this." And then, yeah, then I did 3 months with the academy off the back of that and got a contract, fortunately, and spent the next, what was it, 6 years, I think, there.
Ash, was that kind of a similar for you? Is it that kind of when you arrived? I think, because you, 12 years old, you come over with your family, and you obviously you were schooled here in Edinburgh, but again, a big change for you as well?
Oh, massive change. Like, massive change. When we came here, it was freezing. I remember just being so cold, and we were, got to the airport, and then we took the train and just sat there like proper like cold, and my mom was like, you know, welcome, this is it, this is gonna be the new life for you. So yeah, but really excited. So I hadn't seen my mom in like 5 years or something, so just being with mom and being a family again was really, really special. So yeah, no, really excited.
And then, Ashley, tell us a little bit about how, obviously we've talked a little bit about your kind of rugby journey. Talk to us a little bit about how you came from playing university rugby to being involved in the Scottish squad.
Yeah, so I was really lucky, I think, just being at the right place at the right time at times. So when the uni team started their rugby team, Sarah Quick was kind of around trying to promote that. So I met Sarah then, and she, I think after a few months, she then came over as the coach for the uni team, and I just got to know her a bit better, and she was still playing then. So yeah, just knowing her and talking to her and just getting some advice from her, and she said, you know, like, I think you could really push further and go a bit further. So we looked into joining a club. So I ended up joining Watsonians, and played, trained with them the first season, just kind of trained quite a lot with them, and then got invited to Eastview West camp. And after that game that weekend, Shade Monroe came over and he kind of introduced himself to me, and that was pretty cool, because it's like a head coach of Scotland women's team coming to say hello to Nash, who's, you know, just a nobody. So that was pretty cool, and I think that really kind of motivated me to kind of stick in and see where it would take me, really.
And you were in the back row then, weren't you? But now you've transitioned to the front row. How have you found that?
Yeah, gosh. Back row was good fun. Front row is
not fun.
It's another beast. it's a different beast. It's been a lot of learning, and I'm really lucky because the girls have really taught me quite a lot. So the front row girls have really been helpful, and the coaches have come in to kind of help us out. So I'm still learning. It's still a very steep learning curve that I'm trying to get myself around, but I'm enjoying it. It's something new and something different, and I'm all for that, you know. Just if I can learn a new skill, then I'm up for it. But it's tough out there. It's real tough.
And Johnny was pretty quick, Nashie, wasn't it? I mean, you talk about Shane Monroe having that conversation with you, and then, you know, and in the blink of an eye, you're getting your first cap. Talk us through the emotions of running out and getting your first cap for Scotland.
Yeah, unbelievable. I think even just being around the squad before that first camp was just, you know, getting that email to say, oh, you're in camp this weekend. Every time I got those emails, I was just kind of like, oh, this is amazing. But also, I think the people who have been working with and training with have really helped me to get there. So I'm always grateful for that help and that input that a lot of people have had on me. But that first cap was just unreal. And being able to do that, to get that at Twickenham, I remember just the clock was ticking, the clock was getting eaten up, and I was like, oh, maybe this is not it, maybe today's not the day. And eventually there was a stoppage, and I got to go on the pitch, and I just remember just looking up to the heavens and just being so grateful. I'm a person of faith, so I was thankful to God for that opportunity. It was just unbelievable. And for someone who came from, you know, coming from Zimbabwe and then being able to represent Scotland on the biggest stage is it's a dream that I never dreamt, but it's a dream that definitely came true. So yeah.
You mentioned a dream being true, and the fact that you were Twickenham for your first cap, but almost, well, you tell us, was it even more emotional, a bigger occasion when you ran on for your second cap, and it was in South Africa in front of your extended family?
Yeah, I think South Africa is just one of those that will always stand out. I think being in the motherland was just special. When I realised that I was going to South Africa, I was just shocked, because you get your first cap and you don't know what's going to happen. Like, nobody ever really knows, and being able to then do that in South Africa with my extended family. The first game, it was just my uncle who'd showed up, and it was great to see him because I just messaged him and to say, oh, we're playing, and said, yeah, I'll definitely come over. And then the second game, he single-handedly brought the village with him, which was absolutely amazing. It was so brilliant to see so many of my extended family. Some of them I'd never met before. The wee ones, I'd never met them before. So, just really, really special. And just playing in the heat, or the African heat, was just, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Nashie talks there about some games that stand out for her. What are some of the Scotland games that stand out for you in particular?
I mean, the biggest game for me was definitely, it was my first start. So my first cap, because it was a warm-up game, it was amazing, and it was great, but it didn't feel the same as my first start was Six Nations game against England. And that was, it was kind of a watershed moment for me, and I guess my life kind of changed after that game. It was amazing. I've actually been trying to get hold of the game. It's bloody impossible, but I've been searching high. Now I'm feeling a little bit nostalgic. I've been searching high and low for it.
What year was it?
2012.
I might be able to help you out with that.
Oh, there we go. I knew there was a good reason to do this podcast. Yeah, that was an amazing game for me because it's, as you kind of touched on a couple of times and Nashi's touched on, you just, there's a process you are building towards this thing that you've been aiming for, this thing that you're dreaming for. And for me, for so long, it felt like it was going nowhere. Then all of a sudden, the train kind of hits the track and it just took off for me. And I still felt so new and so young to it at the time. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I remember Robert announced the team on the Tuesday or whatever. My parents flew over from Zimbabwe. Then I remember walking in towards Murrayfield, and that was my first game. Like I said, the warm-up game wasn't sold out. I walked up there, and you know what it's like. Everyone around the entrance, the stadium's packed. And I'll never really forget that. But I think at the time, you don't really appreciate it for what it is. You're kind of, and I've kind of thought this about a lot of moments in my career where you don't take stock though, because you're trying to live in the moment. You're trying to move your career forward. You're always trying to get better and all these things. Whereas in hindsight now, you just think, and you look at some of the people, I'm sure everyone watched the Michael Jordan documentary, and that's one of the things they say was so special about him, is he never lived a day ahead of where he was. Every game that he played, he was completely present. And I think that was the one game where I was completely present, because it was the first one where I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, you appreciate what the crowd's doing. You appreciate the moment for what it is. Where then after that, I think I got caught up in the, where am I going to be in 5 years' time? How am I going to make this next season better, et cetera, where I think I'd have done much better for myself just going game by game.
It's an important thing to realise, isn't it? And like, Dave and I are now old and retired, so Rach and Nashi. It's a great bit of advice. You'll look back when you finish and there'll be moments of pure clarity, moments where you realise that you've actually settled and you're comfortable where you are, comfortable in your own skin. And like, I tried to pass that on to some of the young lads getting their first caps. First cap, it's easy to look at the ground. You're singing the national anthem, look at the ground and get carried away. Like, what's coming next, what you've got to do. But actually, the most important thing to do in your first cap is just to lift your head and, you know, realise where you are and everything that's gone before. And it's easier said than done. Or any caps after that, because it's such a limited number of time you get to do it. But enough nostalgia from the old retired guys. Dave, give us a little bit about what life is now. What's lockdown looking like? I know you were doing a little bit of work with Johnny Walker as well, is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's like I said, it's kind of been reflective of the last 18 months. It's been quite up and down. And I think globally, everyone's going through the same thing. It's a really tough time. And for me, so I retired. It was obviously a lot quicker than I'd expected, so I wasn't as prepared as I would have liked to have been. So I basically spent the next 3 to 4 months after I retired going out and meeting people. Everything I had planned for the last 4 years of my career, I had to squeeze into 3 months. I had to work out because I had no idea what I wanted to do. So for me, it was trying to figure out, first of all, what do I want to do? Because I know, and I believe it's the same for everyone, but I know for me in particular, if I'm not passionate about what I'm doing, I'm not going to work as hard as I need to be successful. So I'm trying to find something that I'm passionate about. And anyway, long story short, I would have been to 100 meetings with people around Edinburgh, around Scotland, around England. I was in London every other week trying to figure that out as well. And like you said, I spent some time with Diageo, Johnny Walker, and it really resonated with me as a company and an opportunity. And basically, it's somewhere that I could see myself growing. And yes, I had an opportunity to go there and I had a job lined up. Then COVID-19 hit, and to absolutely no fault of theirs, the job fell through, unfortunately. Now I'm in the process at the moment of discussing with them and potentially looking at other opportunities, but ideally discussing with them what another opportunity might look like within the company. Now, the reality is for the next 6 months, it's probably going to be unpaid. And I never take for granted how lucky I am to be in a position where I can do that. I can take an unpaid role to further myself later in my career because of what rugby has given me. Rugby has given me an amazing springboard, an amazing opportunity to be in a position that a lot of people aren't. You pick up a newspaper, you pick up a magazine, and you read about millions of people around the world who are living hand to mouth, and they can't feed their families, and they can't support their own life. So it's, I think, you can't go through life continually saying people are worse off than me, I've got to be positive, because at the end of the day, it's your life, and you need to, you know, if you're having a down day, it's a down day. If it's bad for you, it's bad. But particularly now, above all other times in the last 10 years, probably since the last financial crisis, there are so many people in the world that are just so much worse off than, I'm going to assume, all of us on this call, which has been good for me to be able to get that perspective. But that's not to say it dampens my ambition. I think I need to take stock for a bit. I'm trying my best to upskill myself during this time. I'm doing a course in procurement and supply chains, which is fantastic. I'm looking at various courses. There's one, another leadership and supply chain sustainability, which I'm really interested in. That's through one of the big universities down south I'm looking at. So just taking this time to be able to make myself, to make sure I'm not in the same place that I am now in 6 months' time. So like we were saying earlier, I potentially made mistakes in my rugby career where I didn't take advantage of every day. And it's hard, don't get me wrong, when I found out that job wasn't going to happen, I felt like I'd been punched in the gut. Like for a few days, I was really, really down about it. But there's nothing you can do. Like the milk's been spilt, and it's now time for me to start moving forward and still trying to get into Diageo, hopefully, and trying to get a good job there. But at the least I can do is upskill myself, which is hard because my missus is working now. So I'm on full daddy daycare at the moment. So until nursery's open, I've got three full days a week with Logan, which I can tell you is harder than any job I've done so far.
You sent me a picture earlier on of you and Logan at the supermarket. How did that particular journey go? Any tantrums? Any throwing things on the ground?
Carnage,
and how was Logan as well?
Mate, it was carnage. I almost didn't get your joke there. Well done. Carnage, mate. As soon as you think you've cracked parenthood, they just throw you a curveball. So I'm walking around the supermarket. I'm doing really well. Shelley sent me the shopping list with like almond butter, some weird kind of dates that I've never heard of. These are aisles I've never been near in a supermarket. I go to the meat aisle, sometimes the veg aisle, not often, and then I'll go buy some cereal or something down the road, maybe a couple of sweets. But I've never been down these aisles, so I was literally like, I was lost in there. And then Logan was really good. I'd given him, we got a little South African biscuit called a rusk. I don't know if you know, it's amazing for babies. It takes them about 20 minutes to work through it, and I was flying through the shops. Next thing, he's finished this biscuit and all hell broke loose, and I'm in the shop and I'm like spinning plates trying to get things in the basket, and Logan's screaming. I've got him in one arm, nappy bag on my back, he's peed down the side of his thing, and next thing Big Al messages and he's like, mate, just to let you know, the podcast's in 15 minutes. I'm like, oh shit. And I'm racing home like, all right, here we go. Anyway, I got through it. You'll be pleased to know I survived the ordeal.
I am pleased. I'm also like fantastic. Dave Denton using going to the shops as an analogy for life. Going down aisles that he'd never have gone down before to discover new things.
Dave, he's upskilling his taste buds.
That's it. That is just the most profound metaphor you've had on this podcast.
So, Nas, obviously we've chatted a bit with Dave there about kind of what he's now doing outside rugby. Talk us through a little bit about kind of what you've done at university and what you're looking to do in the future.
Yeah, so I'm looking to go into teaching. So I'm currently about to start my second year in September, hopefully, with doing transformative learning and teaching. So it's a master's in primary education and then secondary education up to S3, so I've just done my first year, which was really challenging. I think challenging in terms of, I think what Dave was saying, is trying to balance everything, obviously with rugby and uni and Six Nations and all that stuff. So, but it was good fun. I had P1s for the first term. So yeah, 5 year olds, they are interesting. It was such a learning curve and so much fun. They just love you. They just love having somebody there, and they just want to show you everything they do, and they're just looking for all that validation from you. So yeah, it was brilliant. And then I did I had P5s just towards the end of this term, it was such a big transition, because from P1s where they want all that validation to these independent P5s who don't really want that validation. They know what they want, and it's their way or no way, and trying to work around that was quite interesting. So yeah, no, teaching is the goal, and enjoying the journey so far.
You're doing your refereeing course as well, aren't you? Is that something you might go into?
Yeah, so I did the coaching qualification, so the level 2 a few years back, and that comes with your level 1 refereeing. So when I was during the gap year that I took between my undergrad and my master's, I did a bit of refereeing for like the uni games and stuff, and for me it was important because I wanted to know the game a bit more, and it really kind of helped me to understand a bit more of the rugby game from a different perspective, and I know what to do and what not to do. So it was good to kind of do that.
Dave, can you see yourself getting back into rugby, maybe take a bit of a gap from it, and then maybe some coaching or refereeing?
I don't know, mate. I think definitely not. I wouldn't ever be interested in coaching at a professional level. I wouldn't be qualified, first of all, but I'd like, and I've mentioned it to them, I'd potentially like to get back involved with someone like Ed Brackey's, just on a part-time basis, help some young kids out that are potentially aspiring to be professional players. I definitely wouldn't be against, you know, helping out some individuals who are on their journey up, and maybe mentoring, because like we said, it's if you could go back to your 18-year-old self or your 20-year-old self with the brain that you've got now and the experience that you've got now, I think myself anyway, I think there's so many things that I'd tell myself that are right and wrong. I think there's a rite of passage. You need to learn it yourself, and I can remember so many people just giving me such sound advice that I was just too bullish and ignorant to take heed of. But I'd like to do that. I think I'd like to help people who are starting their journey at the start. And I've spoken to a fair few people who are finishing schoolboy rugby at the moment. But I think that I'd be definitely interested in doing.
Just on that, Dents, then, what would a 30-year-old David Denton tell an 18-year-old David Denton?
There we go. There's the million-dollar question.
Cut your hair.
Yeah, cut your hair. First and foremost, cut your hair. It looks shocking. Ever since I was 21 years old, Scott Johnson was telling me to cut my hair, and I never listened. But I mean,
Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson.
It's a bit pot kettle, that.
He's sure like to stand on it.
Exactly. That's what I used to say. The thing I would tell that 30-year-old me would tell 18-year-old me is consistency. I think that's what I lacked in my career. I think when I started, I genuinely think I was one of the hardest workers in any team that I went to. I worked unbelievably hard because I was a long way behind a lot of the people in Scotland, especially in terms of skill set. But then I think potentially there was definitely a year, maybe 2 years in my career where I took my foot off the gas. And I think that really impacted where I wanted to be and what I wanted to achieve. I'm very proud of the career that I had, but I feel I left a lot out there, which still frustrates me to this day. Obviously, there's circumstances that I couldn't control at the end, but I think there was a time in the middle of my career that I really could have taken the step to the next level if I'd been consistent in my training and if I'd continued to work as hard as I did at the start, all the way through, then I really think I could have got to the level that I really wanted to. And then the other thing is, particularly when I was younger, I still do it to a level now, but I'm a lot more aware of it now. I think I was always too concerned about what people thought of me. I always wanted everyone to like me, and which sometimes could work in my benefit, but could often be a hindrance as well. I think, as Al mentioned earlier, the best rugby I've ever played was when I was comfortable in my own skin and when I was comfortable with who I was. As soon as you start trying to fulfill someone else's impression of what you should be, you're not being true to yourself. And I found that that's when I wasn't playing well, or now in my future, maybe that's going to be when I'm not performing well in my job. Like, I think you've got to find out who you are, what you stand for, and stick by it. I mean, take advice from the people who know what they're talking about. But at the end of the day, I think those are the two things that would be most important for a young person or a young me to know.
I think as well with rugby, it's probably one of the sports where you can just focus on what you're good at and not compare yourself to other people, because it is a sport where kind of so many different shapes, sizes, skill sets fit the mold. And I think it's a sport where you can really just focus on like what you bring rather than always comparing yourself to other people. And I think that is like a massive lesson for me coming through as well, from like when I first started comparing myself to other people and trying to do X, Y, Z, but I was never really going to be good at those. But if you just focus on what you bring and stop worrying about everyone else, it does make you a better player for sure. I would definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Can't help but think back to Nash's analogy around the P1s to the P5s. You know, you come in at P1 and all you're doing is asking questions and trying to please everybody that you possibly can, and then P5s are maybe a wee bit more settled. Now, the balance probably lies somewhere in between, because the one key thing for anything that we're doing is that we're always continuing to learn. But I think you guys have summed that up brilliantly. It's trying to make sure that you get to that point where you've narrowed the focus enough just to know what your journey ahead looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So no, we got quite deep there. We got quite deep. So let's start it off. Let's end it on a more light-hearted note. Give us, Dave and Nashi, a bit of insight into what the last few months has looked like as far as keeping yourselves entertained away from not being able to maybe go and meet up with friends or go training or do the more serious things. Dave, I would imagine with Logan, there will have been a lot of fantastic moments where you're at home, a little bit more than you might have been.
Yeah, a lot of fantastic moments and a lot of utter carnage as well. It's it's been great. The toughest thing with Logan is him getting bored. Now, you don't think an 18-month-old can get that bored, but he's so sick of our housemates. So
there's only so many times that he can watch replays of you playing for Scotland before he's going to get bored.
But only so many times I can YouTube myself and tell him about it. He's sick of it, mate. It's been great being able to get him out now, get him to parks, and he loves it, mate. He loves getting out in the open. But for me, same as everyone, we've been quizzing. My God, have we been quizzing. We do a couple a week anyway, and it's fantastic. For the first time ever, like I said, for 10 years, I've lived away from my family. My sister lived away from my family for 9 years, and we have never, ever had a group call together. Whereas during this period, we've done at least one every week, which has been fantastic. There's all sorts of boyfriends and girlfriends involved now, which is, you know, good, I guess. And the other thing we've been doing is I've still got a poker night. So when I moved over to Scotland, my first year in the academy, we started a poker night. So it was me, Stu McAnally, Alex Blair, Matt Scott, Grant Gilchrist. We're all in a poker night when we were 20 years old, and we're still hammering it. So we've got one tonight. The lads keep pulling up. Oh, they've got better things to do. Like they've got a life or something. But so we've got a poker night tonight, which I love. The poker nights are great. Like it's a lot of money to spend on just a bit of banter. But because every week the Rambo, Stu McAnally takes home the pot just about every second week, which is starting to pain us. But especially because he's the one who needs it the least. I'm the unemployed one, yeah. But so that's been fantastic. The poker nights have been a real good laugh, and it's an excuse to eat naughty food as well.
There's a name for that. You guys not have a collective name for that group?
Do we? Maybe I'm not part of that group you're talking about. That's embarrassing.
Who are the Goofies?
Oh, the Goofies. The Goofies were me, Matt, and Gilko, because we just seem to be very goofy. Well, Gilko is the captain for sure. Gilko is the clumsiest rugby player I've ever played on. He's the guy, if you're doing a mauling session in -2 in the back pitches of Murrayfield, Gilko is going to stand on your toes and your feet every single time. I hated him for it.
What about yourself, Nashi? What have you been doing to keep yourself entertained?
I think just like everybody else, right about now, just quizzing. Yeah, a lot of quizzing. But also it's been nice to just kind of read something that's not academic articles or, the reading that you need to do for uni. So yeah, just been kind of taking it easy and just reading for pleasure, really, rather than reading because I have to read an article or, So no, just really, really chill. Walking, taking nice walks around, and actually rediscovering my neighborhood, which is quite nice.
Neither of you mentioned listening to this official Scottish Rugby podcast, but I know that's high up on your agenda. It's for many people through this tough time. It's been
of course. Pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure to get a bit of insight into what you guys are doing and the rugby journey you've been through.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers, guys.
Been really good, mate. Enjoyed that.
That's all from us here on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.